B-Pod Studios.
You're listening to the Other Identity Podcast. To listen to the full episode, go to checkpointxp.com.
Guys, for downloading and listening to The Other Identity, make sure that you are sharing the word, telling all of your friends about us. Get them in on the conversations. Let us know how it goes between, you and your friends. Just, don't come to blows. You know, actually, one thing that I wanted to mention last segment, which would have been the perfect place for it, is obviously last week we had our, big debate between me and Kevin, Justice League versus the Avengers. Mm-hmm. We're not going to give you the results for that just yet. We're going to let it go a little bit longer, and the reason why is... we want you guys, after having listened to the episode, to reach out to us on Twitter, either at CheckpointXP, Robbie_LandisCP, or BenJMorse. And if listening to the episode, we want to know what you thought. What are your opinions based on what you heard? Who do you think would win? Or do you have any arguments of your own? Let us know, and we will take some of the best ones, some of the good ones, and we'll read them here on the show when we officially let you know in Other Identity canon who would win. Justice League or the Avengers. All right, back on to topic here.
Okay.
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Now, I am going to sit back in a moment and let you kind of explain your love for this this title, because I feel like not a week has gone by on The Other Identity where you haven't said, you know what else was really good? Ultimate Spider-Man. You know what else was really good? Death of Spider-Man. So we'll get into that. But just to give some background to people who might not know, it's crazy to me that Ultimate Spider-Man is 20 years old at this point. It's in college. So Ultimate Spider-Man was this idea around 2000 that I believe was the brainchild of Bill Gemmis, who was the publisher of Marvel at the time. The idea being that Spider-Man in particular at that point had been running for 40 years. And in order for someone to jump in and enjoy Spider-Man, it could be kind of intimidating because you had 40 years of history, all this different stuff. I mean, even I, reading it in the 90s, my Spider-Man was adult married Peter Parker, who was married to Mary Jane. And there was a desire on the part of Gemmis and the people he worked with, like, we want people who are coming in, particularly because there is a Spider-Man movie coming, we want people to be able to come in and pick up a Spider-Man that's still young, but young in the year 2000, and that doesn't have all this continuity behind it. So they enlisted Brian Michael Bendis, now probably one of the top writers in comics, but at the time, just an indie creator, as well as Mark Bagley, who was the longtime artist of Amazing Spider-Man. And they said, all right, we want you to do something called Ultimate Spider-Man. It starts from moment one, as if this is all taking place in the present. Tell the story of young Peter Parker, change what makes sense to change, and tell kind of a contemporary version of Spider-Man. And it was the gateway for a whole new generation of Spider-Man fans, and it ran for years and years. We'll talk about the progression in the next segment, but I know this is how you got into comics.
Yes, so I didn't get into it right at the beginning. Honestly, I'm not even sure what the genesis was for why I decided to pick it up, but this was where I basically launched into it, and I ended up reading up until that point the entire continuity for the Ultimate Universe, because I had found a reading list where everything was just in order for me and just on a platter, like, here you go, read it. And Spider-Man has always stood out to me. Even when you go back to the 90s version of the cartoon, he was basically this buff adult, essentially, even though he was still in school.
Yeah.
There was nothing about him that was a kid. But to me, the best and most pure form of Peter Parker, which, on a previous episode, you've talked about Stan Lee's inspiration for creating Spider-Man, is that he's a kid.
Yeah.
And obviously there are a lot of, teenage heroes in comics now. I still feel like Peter stands out because, even as a character, he understands, I am the last person that should have these powers, right? Even with the powers, I don't have the training or the understanding to use them, right? Captain America, at first he might not have been the person that you would have, thought to be a hero because, he had all these health concerns and all these health issues, but he still wanted them. He wanted to do something with them. Tony Stark, he has the know-how to use, what he has for good. I feel like every hero has a reason that they think, I should be doing this. I need to do this. And Peter finds it in his own way, but he's still always been the last person that should be fighting crime. But he does it anyway, just because it's the right thing to do. And especially in the Ultimate Universe, with him being, I think he starts out at like 12 or 13 years old.
He's young, yeah.
Yes, he's very young. To see that juxtaposed against all of these other heroes, you know, doing what's right. They're heroes, of course. They still have their own agenda of what they think is right, which, you know, leads into, in my opinion, one of the best Spider-Man stories of all time, and that is the death of Spider-Man, where I don't think you get to see the whole story if you're reading just Spider-Man, but
no, it spills into a couple other like limited series and stuff like that. But you can get the spine of the story in Spider-Man.
Yes, yes. But for me, like the part that really drove it home was, you know, during there's all types of stuff going on, and the first big one is that there's an attack on the Triskelion, and Norman Osborn, the Green Goblin, breaks out. You know, he takes the top eight villains, including Doc Ock and a few other ones with him, and they're all basically like, hey, we know who Spider-Man is. He's a kid. Let's go and crush him. And Doc Ock is like, you know what? Maybe let's not do that. I'm not really a bad guy. I'm going to just go back to my research. And I'm pretty sure that Norman Osborn, I don't know if he does him in, but he whoops him pretty hard.
Yep.
But when Spider-Man realizes, like, oh no, you know, Aunt May is in trouble, heads back home, and in doing so is caught in a crossfire between the Ultimates, a.k.a. the Avengers, and this Black Op groups led by Nick Fury that has, like, Blade, the Punisher, and they're clashing with Cap and his guys on one of the bridges in New York. And Spider-Man sees the Punisher taking aim at Captain America with a rifle and basically takes a bullet for Cap, falls into the river, they just go on fighting. And Peter Parker, now with a bullet, I'm pretty sure he takes it like through the chest or whatnot, still goes back, and just there's this great fight scene where he literally to the end just gives it his all, and he's just a kid just doing what he thinks is right. While the quote-unquote real heroes, the adult heroes, are just fighting each other because they're being, I think, manipulated by Loki, if I'm right. But to me, that story just always stuck out in my head so much. It strikes to me at the heart of what really makes a comic book, a superhero, great.
Absolutely. And I would recommend to people, that's Death of Spider-Man is several years in. That's the kind of, obviously, the farewell to the Peter Parker character, at least for a little
Correct.
Bit. Mm-hmm. But I would recommend people start right from Ultimate Spider-Man number one in 2000,
well.
Because there's so much they did. And this is the genius of Bendis, is that he took the heart of what Stan Lee and Steve Ditko did in creating Spider-Man, a lot of the stuff you just touched on and why you loved it. But he also said, all right, what if they were doing it again, because he's basically getting a chance to redo it 40 years later, what could you do differently? And it's little things like the fact that in the original Spider-Man origin, we meet Uncle Ben for a couple panels and then he's dead. So there's an impact, but you know, we don't really feel like, well, I'm not upset that this character died. He could be anybody. The fact that in Ultimate Spider-Man, they space it out and you actually get to know Uncle Ben and Aunt May over the course of like the first six issues. And you know what's going to happen to Uncle Ben, but just building up that anticipation. And really, I remember that was one of the strongest parts of that first arc for me, was I love this guy. And when he dies, I get where Peter is coming from. The great power and great responsibility resonates to me so much more. And I'm not dogging on Stan and Steve. Obviously, they did what they did back in the 60s because they didn't know what they had there. But something about that foresight of being able to really set up the origin, I think it's one of the it's an incredible version of Spider-Man.
You know, I've come to realize recently, especially when telling people about some of the stuff I'm reading, that when you talk about comics, it comes off a lot sillier than the actual execution of it. Like, for example, I was reading All-Star Batman the other day, and there's a panel where Batman uses a real flamingo to knock out a cyborg Nightwing.
Makes sense.
Now, for all of you animal activists out there, don't worry, the flamingo ended up being a cyborg as well. But just that a picture seems ridiculous. And one of the things about Ultimate Spider-Man, one of my actual favorite arcs, was there was a point where the May Parker house ended up becoming like a real world for teen superheroes.
Yes,
Spider-Man
love
lives there.
That. I love that.
Iceman lived with them. I think Johnny
Human Torch was
Fantastic
there.
Four lived there.
Kitty Pryde?
And like, Yeah, I think Kenny was there at some point as well. And just, like, that idea on its head, I'm not going to blame people for going, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
It was amazing.
It was so great. Just, I don't know, everything about Ultimate Spider-Man and the fact that he's a kid, I think, allows for a little bit more of the lighthearted sort of silly stuff
right.
that happens. But there's still also that seriousness and that gravity, that gravitas that exists there. And then, obviously, you know, the death of Spider-Man made way for Miles Morales, Spider-Man in his own right, which we're going to talk about a little bit more here coming up when we talk about Miles Morales number one. Just Miles in general. There's so much to Miles. Like honestly, sometime in the future, he should get his own show, episode dedicated to him. But that's coming up next, guys. Miles Morales, Spider-Man.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.